This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to the Vedic Wisdom. Thanks for being with us today. I'd like to talk about happiness because it's important to everybody. Everybody wants to be happy. Everybody feels they deserve to be happy. Everybody is trying to achieve happiness. And they even enjoy making other people happy. So happiness is a significant thing in the human experience. And we like it when we see our pets are happy, our children are happy, when friends are happy, even when the boss is happy, you know? So happiness is a significant issue. And this issue is not confined to just you or I. It's not confined to the situation, your daily life and not mine. Every living entity is striving in their own way to be happy. Whether it's the horse in the paddock or the cows in the barn, whether it's the spider on the wall, everybody's aspiring to be happy. Well, in the Vedic literature, this is addressed because it is a inherent concomitant factor of the living entity's consciousness. All conscious living entities wish they were happy. The Lord has come forward in the Bhagavad Gita as it is and directly discussed this issue. The way it's done is it's taken from a natural perspective. Nature, under nature, everyone has a capacity to become happy. And it's done in different modes, different facets, because of our natural inclinations. Some people are born ditch diggers. Some people are born judges. And many, many things in between. And we all have that natural inclination or direct attraction for different levels of experience in life. But behind it all, that same desire to be happy is prevalent in all of us. And this is why the society has turned into a society of entertainment-orientated beings. Now, the television has done that to you. Because the powers that be recognize that standard, normal, human characteristic to want to be happy. So rather than delivering real happiness, they're delivering distractive things that entertain. And they've substituted happiness with entertainment. And many people don't think there's a difference. This is the sad affairs, the condition in our lives. That people are having words reinterpreted in meaning, and this difference between them is blurred. So we resort to the Vedic literature when clarity and factual perspective is required. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, the Lord specifically addresses this issue of happiness to decipher between the illusory conception of happiness and the reality of happiness and the implications it has on your conscious development and on your contribution. Because this is really what we are. Many, many people, they go, oh, I've worked so many years in this industry and that industry, and I've just dedicated my life to doing good to humanity. I want to leave my mark, something that benefits people. Some people come to it early in life, some people late in life, some people somewhere in between. But the perspective is relatively common. Everybody wishes, unless you're of nasty nature, everybody wishes to make a positive contribution. Everybody wants to be happy. So in this section of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, and I'll give this to you straight right out of the translations, that which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mood of goodness. So this in itself is very, very instructive. We've got more to go, but this one right here gives you a good instruction. That oftentimes when you're selflessly doing the right thing, it seems as though, oh, they're just taking advantage of me. Oh, everything's going their way. What about me? But gradually it turns into nectar. Oh, it is so wonderful to see how happy they are, or so much good we did, or how many problems we solved. Wow, I'm glad I stuck to it. And this is called happiness in the mode of goodness. That you reach the intended goal, even though it was difficult to weed out or to coordinate or what have you, but you reached the goal. That goal is where the happiness is selfless. That's called happiness in the mood of goodness. Now, happiness that is derived from the contact of the senses with their varieties of objects is like nectar in the beginning, but in the end is just like poison. And that type of happiness is said to be in the mood of passion. Now this, everybody's got this experience. I want this car. I want this new music album, CD. I want this shirt. I want to go to this meeting or gathering or movie or opera or... And the difficulties that you experience in doing it, it becomes a complete fiasco. Oh my goodness. Or I get this beautiful car and I can't get in and out of it. It doesn't fit me right. It hurts my back. Or I got 14 tickets this month in this damn car. I just can't seem to make it go the speed limit. You lose the relativity of speed. It's so awesome. And this is what happens to our lives. So we desire a variety of things. But when we get that thing, it doesn't work out like we thought. Or we desire an experience or association or a trip or whatever. The anticipation is far greater than the reality of it. You know that that is in the mode of passion. It was really born by desire. It wasn't born from a willingness or intent to contribute and do good. It was actually born of a desire to satisfy oneself or one's senses or mind. This is called happiness in the mood of passion. Now the Lord again says, that happiness, which in the beginning and the end is blind to the process of self-realization and is based on sleeping and laziness and illusion, is said to be in the mode of darkness. Now the example that comes up here very easily is video games. There is no intent to do good. There is no intent for self-realization. There is no concern to give anything to anyone. There is no selfless contribution. There is not even any intention to become happy. It is simply to either compete or to achieve or to outdo someone else or spend some time outside of your material predicament in some illusory conception. And it's a blinding, binding, and suffering from the beginning to the end. The whole thing is sour. You end up fat, lazy, out of shape, bloated, grumpy. Your mind is tired, exhausted. Your eyes are burning. These things all come over you because you're not doing what you should be doing. There isn't anything. You don't win anything. Let's say you what do you call it? They max the game out or whatever they call it, clock it or something. You win this game, and what do you get? You get it's across the screen. It says, congratulations. There's no benefit. It's been no gain. It's been a massive loss of time, consciousness, health, experience, physical aptitude. Everything's wasted, gone. Pew. This is called happiness in the mode of ignorance. And we find that the powers that be are offering you this type of happiness, this type of enjoyment, entertainment, that simply degrades your potency, simply distracts you from your true potential. It's degrading. You've lost that time. You haven't exercised self-realization. You haven't educated yourself. You haven't helped anybody else. You haven't made a contribution. You haven't even kept up with your responsibilities. Many times we see the people, the man is sitting playing games and the woman is going, take the rubbish out. Fix the car. And he's going, oh, bitch. And all I hear is yelling, hollering because he's lost. He's lost in the mode of ignorance, calling it happiness when it's actually only distress. It makes everything in his life take a slide down. Things aren't done. Things aren't right. Things cost too much. Too lazy. Too tired. Too all these negatives stack up because the whole experience was in the mood of ignorance. So from the Vedic literature, we can understand that there's goodness, passion, and ignorance in all aspects of life, in enjoyment, in faith, in food, in desire. All of these are divided, and the Vedic literature clearly explains these, each one of them in turn, so that you have the ability to analyze and adjust and understand clearly which is actually beneficial and which is not. Because we want to be happy, but the way we go about it is due to our social association, our predicament in the society. If you're surrounded by ignorant people, you think that doing ignorant things is the right thing to do. Whether it's ignorant people, passionate people, good people, it's the same. You're influenced by what's around you, and you think that that is the right way to do it, and you try in that fashion. But to get above that and get the Lord's version, to get the higher perspective that these three divisions are there, and you can choose any of those three divisions, and you can, by association, fall or rise yourself into one of those other categories. But beyond that, above that, there is the higher perspective, the self-realized soul, who sees all three of these concepts are illusory. And that real happiness comes when the eternal living entity makes contact with the eternal Lord and renders eternal service. It's outside of this temporary have and not have, do and don't do, enjoyment, suffering, rich, poor, duality. This material world is called clearly, repeatedly explained very nicely in the Vedic literature, that this material world of duality is simply a place of suffering. You can get A, B, C, which means goodness, passion, or ignorance, type of happiness or enjoyment or food or faith or what have you. But all of them are still binding you into the material conception of life. Now, what benefit is the material conception of life to a spiritual, eternal, living entity? Nothing. It's simply distracting. It's not fulfillment. So we're caught, all of us are caught, in the cycle of birth and death because of our not knowing what to do and what not to do, and bouncing from goodness, passion, and ignorance, and back again, 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 again. I'll try this, I'll try that. No, I did that. Try this again. Oh, it didn't work. Try it again. Try something else. Try that one. No, I did this. What are we doing? And this is what our society is doing. They have a problem at an intersection, and they screw it up worse. So they dig it all up and they do something else, and it's worse again. They combine, they put in a roundabout because there's so much trouble with stop signs. And then they take the roundabout out because that thing, they put in lights. And then the lights are a difficulty, so they try to add some free turns here and there and use just the signs again. And ends up a mix of all of it, and nobody's happy. It didn't work really at all to begin with. This is a very crude example, but this is what is happening in our lives. We're going around patching together our forms of solutions that, according to the Vedic literature, they will automatically fall within the goodness, passion, or ignorance conception. And this has nothing to do with the goal of life. The goal of life is transcendental, which means above these three moods of nature. And above these moods of nature, what is there? There is the self-realized soul who's engaged in love of God, who is contributing positively to human society, that is not in anxiety himself any longer, that is selflessly executing his life with happiness. Real, sustained happiness. And this is a clue. If you can't sustain it, it's not real. It's temporary. But real happiness is sustainable. That's one of the needed characteristics we all have. I don't want to be happy for a while, do you? I don't want to be happy now and again. Every one of us wants to be happy all the time. So if we come to that platform where we are transcendentally situated, the happiness is unending. But if we neglect to get there, we're simply going from ignorance to passion, to goodness, and back down, and back up, and back down. Boing, 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 boing. So the Vedic literature shows us that aside from these three modes of material nature that are competing against each other and defeating one another and making life go up and down and back and forth and sometimes good and sometimes not, above all that is the transcendental platform, Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma. This Brahma-Bhuta platform is where one does not fall down again. His consciousness is fixed in that standard of conscious lust. His life is molded in such a way that his happiness is not interrupted. And it's very difficult. Very difficult in this age with so much going on, so many distractions. It takes a strong mind. But that strong mind can be achieved right now in this life by you and me, every one of us. But it's back to what we were saying earlier. You have to know what tool to use. You can't use the association of other people because the other people are all bouncing up and down between the three modes themselves. If you want to be fixed on the transcendental platform, you need some transcendental potency. It's like, give me a lift up. That's one of the business phrases they've coined. We don't want handouts, we want hand ups. Well, a hand up in spiritual life means associating with spiritual potency, spiritual energy. And this is where the Vedic knowledge, the Krishna consciousness movement, wins by a million miles. The Krishna consciousness movement is propagating, experiencing, employing the transcendental sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. This Maha Mantra, this great mantra for deliverance is what it means. It brings the mind into that peaceful state, and it brings the consciousness into that level of awareness where you can see beyond these three modes of material nature. Where you can get a hand up, a perspective up from this competitive, entertainment-based perspective of life. You know, and so does everyone else, it's not fulfilling. But you need some tool to get you up off this platform onto the spiritual platform where you start to taste that nectar you're looking for. That is the Maha Mantra, the great mantra for deliverance. That's what it is for. It was inaugurated by Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago. It was propagated, it was expanded, it was propagated in every aspect of human life. It spread all over the planet for all the living entities in the human form of life to make use of it. It is extremely simple to use. You simply utter the sound. Utter the right words in the right pattern for your own benefit and the benefit of others. It's no imposition on the mind. It's just relieving the contamination from the modes. So your mind can be, your heart can be free. And you can lift yourself up then. It isn't that the Lord takes you and lifts you up. You get free illumination, cosmic consciousness instantly. No, but he takes away the contamination that's holding you down. Then it's up to you, with your free will, with your ascending determination and potency as a living being, you can make it. You can get over the wall, shall we say. He's broken all the ropes and knots and attachments that are holding you from climbing over the wall into the transcendental reality. This Maha Mantra is that tool. It says so directly in all of the Vedic literature that the Maha Mantra, this great, unbelievably powerful mantra that is activated by simply chanting sincerely and hearing. Say it, hear it. It takes away the knots. It relieves you of the encumbrances that you've accumulated for a very, very, very long time. And it gives you the opportunity to use your own potency and pull yourself out of these misconceptions and illusions of life. Get above the material conception. And by this method, you enter into spiritual consciousness. You enter into spiritual activities. You have spiritual vision. You're removed from the influences of the material elements. You're removed from these three modes of nature that everyone is embarrassed by. So this freedom, which is called liberation, you become liberated from the struggle for existence. So you know, You learn, you experience this taste of actual transcendental happiness. And then you can see clearly, that material happiness, whether goodness or passion or ignorance, it's all temporary and it's not fulfilling. But this transcendental happiness, it's subtle, but it's real and it's unending. It's constantly there and available, just like the Maha Mantra itself. You have no restriction of using it. You can use it anytime you want, anywhere you are, under whatever circumstances, you can use it. You have that much power. You don't have to carry a tool bag with you. It's very practical. You don't have to be a rich man. You can be broke. But with this tool of the mantra that you know, it's there in your mind, you become purified. So this is a very intelligent application of spiritual potency for the upliftment of living entities who are overcome by forces greater than them. You have a portable tool belt, shall we say, that you can use anywhere, wherever you want, at no cost, that has potency to cut through the modes of material nature. Now, let's be honest about it. Nature is very strong. Look at the forces in the sea or in the wind or in gravity. Holy, holy. You haven't got a show of overcoming those forces. So you can just see that these modes of material nature are very strong, and your conceptions are locked in those modes of nature. But this Maha Mantra cuts them like a hot knife cuts through butter. Gone. Instantly. So this is a massively huge benediction upon the human species of life by the Lord himself in his incarnation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the upliftment and deliverance of those living entities who have recognized that this material existence is a cycle of good and bad, high and low, enjoyment and suffering, and that it's inadequate to fulfill the heart and consciousness with the happiness we're all looking for. So by using this mantra, this is the spiritual master's instruction, hear and chant. That's where Krishna consciousness, spiritual realization, love of God begins. Hearing and chanting. So you hear this mantra, you hear the Vedic literature from the spiritual master, and you chant this mantra, your life changes. You gradually want to associate with higher beings. You gradually want the opportunity for more spiritual contact. You want to get up on the transcendental platform and stay there. You know that these three modes of material nature, they have different qualities, but they all have the same temporary aspect. And you're not into the temporary thing. You're an eternal living entity who wants eternal happiness. End of story. Come on. Nothing, no one, anywhere, whatever is offering you that but this Krishna consciousness movement and this Maha Mantra. So what a great opportunity. No cost. Just simple, sincere desire. A humble willingness to listen and learn. That's all. The potency is there, delivered unto you for your upliftment and benefit. That's what this Krishna consciousness is about. That's what this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is about.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.